Hey Veeam Community Podcast listeners, it's on. VeeamON 2015 has been announced and will be returning to Las Vegas. VeeamON 2015 will be held October 26th through the 29th at the Aria Resort Hotel and Casino. Like last year, the Veeam CE course will be offered at a discount, but this year it will be held before the event. VeeamON is the event dedicated to data center availability, and this year's event will be even bigger and better than before. You don't want to miss it. Want to find out more? Check out go.veeam.com/veeamon and pre-register. That way you'll be the first to know when early bird pricing is available and stay up to date on all the latest for VeeamON 2015. Also be sure to like the VeeamON Facebook page. We'll see you in Vegas.
A couple of VMware hosts, a couple of Hyper-V hosts. Now I've got a number of different virtual machines on both. I need to move the data up to the service provider cloud. How exactly does that work?
Rick, it's really simple, but there's several things that take place. We have compression, we have deduplication, so you have a few options, so we're going to have to dig in a little bit. Tell me more about your environment.
Oh man, forget it. I'm just going to the whiteboard. Folks, you can do this too. Go to veeam.com/whiteboard. You can see Jose, his awesome show, his occasional awesome guests like myself. You can learn a lot. Check it out. Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 105, Solid State of the Union 2015. Here we go. Today my guest is Doug Rollins from Micron Storage. How you doing, Doug?
Couldn't be better. Thanks for asking.
Hey, I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. And, you know, solid state storage, non-rotational storage, putting your storage in memory. There's a lot of things going on, Doug. And, you know, I need some help sorting out this stuff. So before we get started into talking about what's going on today, can you give the listeners a background of what you do, where you're from, and your role at Micron Storage?
Sure, can do. So I guess the easiest place to start is where I came from. I spent about 10 or 12 years at a relatively large system integrator reseller focused mostly on enterprise platform development. Things like backup appliances, email archiving appliances, iSCSI SAN arrays, and that kind of thing. Came over to Micron, in early 2009, started out in the Enterprise Applications Engineering Group, and recently moved from that team over to a technical marketing role. It's kind of aligned along with, if you're familiar with the Intel technical marketing or TME role, it's really aligned with that. My main job function now is to focus on customers who have solved hard problems using our products in innovative ways. Also focused on how Micron products can be differentiated in this very broad market, but ultimately really helping to drive the understanding to anyone, frankly, who wants to listen about how solid-state drives are different, how they work, where they fit, even to some cases maybe where they don't fit so great, but really to kind of open it up a little bit and help people have the next level of understanding so that if they're interested in solid state for things like backup reasons, performance reasons, or power, they can make a really informed decision before they go out and spend their money.
Oh, that's what it's all about. I mean, as everyone knows, Veeam, in particular myself, right, we're definitely focused on backup and availability. But I see too many times, Doug, that traditional approaches to that transition from, say, tape-first backups to disk-based backups, that first landing spot. I see people kind of like the idea of disk-based backups, but they've had some growing pains, some learning opportunities, everything from meeting the recovery points objectives, recovery time objectives, managing the footprint, managing the performance. So and people that are making that decision, that transition to really committing to disk-based backups, what are some of the differences you see between hard drives and solid-state drives, or generically speaking, that type of disk-based backup transition?
In terms of looking at the storage device itself, right, because that's really where Micron focuses and where I focus, ostensibly these things, SSDs, look quite a bit like what we're used to seeing in HDDs. So I found it's really helpful if you kind of peel back the covers a little bit and look at some of the key design differences or operational differences, and that really helps highlight where each product may shine. So You know, for example, if you think about SSDs, right, they have no moving parts. I mean, there's nothing inside of that thing that moves. Spinning platters? Nope. Heads bouncing back and forth? Nope. Or motors that cause vibrations between two storage units? Nope, don't have those either. So what we end up with in SSDs, if we look at particularly a random workload, is a much lower latency, because we don't have to move those heads from one spot to another to get to a different area of the media. The latency is substantially less. SSDs have no spinning platters and motors, no actuators flopping those heads back and forth, so we end up drawing substantially less power. And not only that, not only is the power draw less, because the performance is so much higher, we draw power for a shorter amount of time to accomplish the same storage goal. So it's almost like you're multiplying the power savings together.
Well, you hit on a couple of points, and I could speak to some of that right from experience. So let's start with the PowerPoint. Not PowerPoint as in presentation time. We're going to keep it a podcast here, but power draw, and folks, this is, you know, most easily seen IT pros that listen to this podcast. You know, you might make that transition to a solid-state drive for your laptop or your endpoint device. Cheap plug for Veeam. Make sure you download Veeam Endpoint Backup Free. You can back it up for free, currently in beta. But when you make that transition to a solid-state drive on your endpoint device, especially with laptops, you'll notice your battery life will improve. I can speak to this right from experience. Very easy to observe. But you hit on something that, you know, I have to educate people a lot about, and that's that random read phenomena, if you will. When it comes to, especially for backups, random reads can really be a problem for, let's say, dedupe appliances or slower rotational drives, those types of things. And where are you going to need that, folks? You're going to need that on restores from backups. You know, disk-based backups, you kind of like the idea of it's always on. You like the idea that it's very accessible. Additionally, you like the idea maybe of some software-based compression and deduplication in the case of Veeam, for example. But getting that out of there, that's random reads. How do solid-state drives, Doug, address the random read phenomena?
Well, the interesting thing is that random workloads are where SSDs really shine. And it's primarily because, what I mentioned earlier, we have no moving parts. So it doesn't really matter where the data is on the SSD. The access time is essentially the same. That's really different than you get from rotational media. I mean, you know, you can imagine if you've got a piece of data, let's say you're doing a restore, and part of what you're restoring is, to take an extreme example, on the outer track of the disk, and the next part is on the inner track of the disk, and the next part is on the middle track of the disk. I mean, you can envision those heads bouncing back and forth from the outside all the way across the disk to the inside, halfway back across to the middle. And even though those individual transitions by themselves don't take very long, when your workload has those heads moving back and forth and back and forth because of its random nature, they do add up. And you can see that if you look at performance characteristics, or even if you look at data sheets for spin drives, where the random performance is... Well, it's pretty darn low, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, if you look at flash drives, we don't do that. I mean, for us, we don't care where the data is. We don't care what piece of NAND it's in, or what chip enable, or what page or block. It's there's nothing to move. So the transition between any two points on an SSD is the same as the transition between two adjacent points, or two points that are at opposite logical ends of the SSD. It's really all the same to us.
Well, I gotta play fair here. Now, are you telling
me
ahead. That is it like a full replacement for rotational hard drives? I mean, should I throw them all away? I've got like 50 of them in my house.
Well, you know, it sort of is in some ways, and it sort of isn't in the others. And you know, maybe this is a good spot where we can open the covers a little bit and talk about some of the unique characteristics of SSDs versus HDDs, and maybe shed a little bit more light on that.
Yeah, please do, because I have personally tasted I've seen the mountain of solid-state storage, and it is good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not ready to remove all rotational drives. But for the listeners, how do you make the decision on whether to invest in rotational spinning drives or take the solid state approach seriously? You know,
well,
when it comes to the differences, how do we, you know, look at, aside from performance, is it, you know, cost comes up, you know, then there's a lot of hybrid approaches, tiering, all those other things. You know, it's also another side factor is that everybody has a lot more stuff going on today. But, you know, what kind of thinking points would you offer the public in that regard?
Sure. So I think the first place to start is to look at the characteristics of the workload in general. And specifically, the more random the workload is, the more benefit we're going to get out of using SSDs over hard drives. As we move over to a more sequential workload, if we're comparing, let's say, a SATA interface or a SAS interface, the performance in terms of megabytes per second ends up being roughly the same. And that's because a large block sequential access is really the ideal access for spin drives. So SAS and SATA SSDs don't have a particular advantage there. On the other hand, if we look at PCI Express attached, whether it's NVMe or AHCI based, there is a substantial advantage when we compare to spin drives. Remember, spin drives, even with the ideal access pattern, they're still limited to the bus interface speed, right?
Not so, in the case of it, of the PCI Express, because you're
exactly.
going right on backplane, right?
But if we look at a spin drive, the best we could ever hope to do with SATA is 6 gigabits per second. The best we could ever hope to do with SAS is 12 gigabits per second. On the other hand, if we look at PCI Express, I mean, we're plugged right into the chipset, essentially. We've got PCI Express lanes coming right off the chipset, and those go right into our storage device. So instead of thinking about speeds in terms of gigabits per second, with PCI Express SSDs, we think in speeds in terms of gigabytes per second. So even with this nice linear sequential access pattern, the optimal access pattern for spin, as soon as we talk about PCI Express as our SSD interface, we're talking an order of magnitude faster. We're talking, you know, multiple gigabytes per second.
Well, and that's just it. No short stroking of the rotational drives is going to be anywhere
ever
able to catch the backplane or the bus on the PCI Express bit. So you hit on something that I want to clarify for the listeners. You know, sequential reads and writes, random reads and writes. Now, folks out there listening, I understand that you don't always know what your workloads do. I mean, I've been there when I worked at the bank and then at the glass industry before. I don't always know what these workloads are doing, physical servers, VMs, you name it, okay? So here's some practical tips here. Backup applications, generally, especially on Restore, going to be random reads and as little writes, okay? So that the performance of non-rotational storage is there when you need it. Here's an example of something that does have sequential writes, a file server. Most times, stuff just comes in the occasional read. You know, file servers are a good example of that type of use case. And, you know, there still might be a good use case for rotational storage there because they're usually very large, very little change rate, and stuff usually only comes in the occasional read. I look at file servers, at least on the aggregated space when it comes to virtual machines, and I see literally single-digit change rates. So that's just in my experience, just to kind of give people some things, some thinking points there. Virtual machines, inherently random. Structured data types like SQL Server, Exchange, Oracle, those are going to be, you know, things you definitely could benefit with SSDs today. And, you know, you mentioned the on-bus PCI Express approach, and let's explain that, folks. This is an accessory card that goes into a computer or a server, PCI Express interface, with a drive, basically the cells right on that card, and it shows up as a storage device to the server. Now, I've done it myself with VMware ESXi, and I'm getting ready to write a blog post of basically putting a Veeam repository on every server. So think about that. Imagine if you had the backups on a backplane or on the PCI Express bus, a a small repository for the absolute quickest incremental backups, the absolute quickest restores, and then that's also a source to take the backups off-site. So you have a small retention on very high-performance storage. Those of you who have read the Veeam blog, this is what I call the ultimate backup architecture. This is a mindset. It's not a part number, okay? The ultimate backup architecture puts very, very fast storage very close to the running workloads so that the backups are quicker, as are the restores, and then you can move it off-site, tape, cloud, build replicas, disk backups off-site, a lot of different ways to do it. So keep that in mind, folks, and watch me on Twitter for some stuff around that. But back to topic here, Doug. You know, if you look at the memory, and I talked about the cells on those cards. Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about NAND and the DRAM that goes into the actual cells and those memories around these types of components?
Sure. So I can tell you that, having been doing this since early 09, initially there was a lot of concern about where, and specifically there's at least two types of NAND media that are really popular in the enterprise market now, one of which is sort of fading into history and one of which is really caught on and commanding the lion's share of the enterprise market. The former is SLC, or single-level cell, and this is a NAND type that stores one data bit for each NAND cell. The reason that people really gravitated towards SLC is in the early days of solid-state drives, a lot of folks didn't really know how much wear they would require. You got to keep in mind, too, and we may talk about this in a minute, but SSDs do wear, unlike rotating drives, and SLC-based media had a very, very high endurance. It also had a really high cost, and in late 08, early 09, there really wasn't the technology to bring the other type, MLC or multi-layer cell, which stores 2 bits per cell, up to the same performance and endurance level of SLC. So we had this sort of chasm between the two NAND types, and most commonly, again back in 09, you would see MLC used in client products, which were far less demanding, and SLC used in enterprise products. But then there was a major shift. There was a major shift in terms of the technology built into the SSDs, both in terms of controller hardware design and acceleration, as well as firmware. And without going into the nth degree of detail of exactly what made the change, the net of it was pretty simple. We now have MLC-based enterprise-class SSDs that have similar or better performance than their SLC versions of just a year or so ago. They have better or similar endurance to their SLC brethren from just a year or so ago. And ultimately, the price has dropped substantially to the point where MLC-based enterprise products are now readily approachable at really all budgets, and they're very widely deployed across multiple workloads. And the key here has been advances in the cell technology itself, the controllers that drive the data patterns and putting the data on the cell, and the firmware that runs in those controllers to enhance the overall endurance of the SSD.
So this is probably something that's very applicable to myself. I'll admit, folks, I don't know it all, but additionally, the listeners out there, too many times I think people try to do what they used to do with new stuff. And best example, modern era, was build applications and workloads in virtual machines the same way you would a physical server. Let's advance to this type of discussion. I know people that will still make RAID arrays with SSDs. And part of me thinks that's not a good idea. First of all, you probably have a controller at that point that isn't aware of an SSD. Secondly, it's probably overkill and plus one for a good backup. So, you know, when it comes to like the drive failure planning standpoint, Doug, do you recommend people do RAID arrays or just make sure the backup's good? Kind of how would you address that eventual failure, the eventual wearing?
Well, I guess I would say yes to all. So you know, a good backup strategy is always your first best line of defense,
mm-hmm.
because it doesn't just protect against individual drive or system failure. I mean, there's a whole lot that can fail in this food chain. It makes sure that you're always prepared no matter what happens. You mm-hmm. could even have something as simple as a brownout at a site taking down multiple machines. And if you've got a current offsite backup, you can be back up and running at an alternate site very, very quickly. So that's always your first best line of defense. Now, inside the SSDs themselves, we do a lot to help ensure that they don't fail. And I can give you a couple examples of that. So one example would be we have a RAID-like infrastructure inside our enterprise drives that protects against catastrophic media failure. If a piece of media inside the drive were to fail outright, the drive continues running and the data is still there. But your original question was, should we do RAID at the host level when we're using SSDs? And there are cases where it's still applicable, but there's a cautionary note here. Most SSDs on the open market, whether they're SAS or SATA, doesn't matter. They offer a level of performance that can eclipse the capability of the RAID controller parity generation engine. And what I mean by that is you get enough of these things hung off of an IOP on a RAID controller, and it's trying to calculate that parity bit across the stripe of just a few SSDs, and their performance overwhelms its parity calculation capability. It simply can't keep up. And so you end up with very high-performance storage devices bottlenecked by the controller to which they're attached. So that can be a real challenge when it comes to figuring out the right balance. And there's other options to help work around that too. I mean, if we think about ZFS, it's a good example where we can take as many flash drives as we can fit inside of our system, attach them as individually addressable singleton targets completely outside a RAID, and deploy something like ZFS, where inside the machine we keep multiple copies. It's almost like an in-the-machine real-time backup.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine we do, say, ZFS2, where we have two copies of all the data inside, and then we do a periodic backup using your software on the outside. It's almost like we have double protection against failure.
I know a lot of people who end up fancying ZFS as an underlying file system to hold Veeam backups, right, as one of their availability techniques. But I would be remiss, Doug, if I did not mention that really, any way you go about using SSDs or flash, really, is make sure you can pull in things like smart attributes, because the smart attributes on these type of devices are very, how can I say, enlightened. And I've used these before. You can use a little software that'll read them, especially in Windows. And I know with virtual platforms, there's hooks as well. But like, for example, there's this ID code 202,
yep,
or CA, which means percent lifetime used. That means mm-hmm. it's exceeded its expected lifetime. Is that right? Pretty sensible information so that you don't set yourself up for failure in the next couple of months or years or whatever.
It is. So Micron has settled on Smart ID 202 as an indicator of how worn the SSD is. So any of our SATA Enterprise SSDs, you query that attribute, and think of it like the gas gauge in your car. It tells you, you know, is it full or is it empty? It tells you, is that SSD fresh out of box, you know, brand new, or how much wear has been applied to it? Now, it's interesting because inside of each SSD, the method used to calculate that attribute may be different. And there's a real reason for that. We use different media types. We use different channels on the controller. We use different factors to calculate ID202 to ensure that ID202 accurately reflects the lifetime used for that particular drive design. But because we abstract it to a single smart attribute, we take care of all of the arithmetic and the monitoring, the different touch points inside the SSD to make sure the data presented is accurate. All the host or the admin has to do, look at that one ID, and it'll accurately reflect the lifespan of that drive.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where you want to make sure that this data from the hardware is properly viewed. You know, you can't just treat it, you know, as a rotational drive because the attributes just don't apply. And this is a caution where jam these types of things into controllers, maybe you're mixing rotational drives and SSDs, this is where you can really miss out on that rich data, in my opinion. So, you know, that being said, what about this phrase of, I've heard the phrase steady state performance, right? You know, I want to make sure people get the right idea about how they can test and make sure that they can, you know, get what the promise is of solid state drives. And, you know, I know SNIA has been providing some understanding on that. You know, what's your view on that?
Sure. So one thing to keep in mind, one way that SSDs differ from HDDs is their write performance characteristics. So looking at HDD first, because that's the very, very simple example. They employ write-in-place media, meaning if there's data already written to the drive, you can overwrite it in a single step. Really simple. So what you see with HDDs or spin drives, as you write them, the write performance doesn't change. Very simple, very linear. SSDs are different. The media that we use on SSDs, NAND, when it has data in it, even if the host has marked that data as available for deletion, the write process is two steps. The first step is one has to erase the existing data, and the second step, one can then write new data. So there's that extra erase step in there. That's the first part. Now the second part is there's a disparity between the atomic write unit, the smallest piece of data that can be written, and how much data gets erased. And this really gets into the sort of the innards of NAND and the way NAND works. Fundamentally, one has to realize that writes occur at what's called the page level, a NAND page. A page is anywhere from 4K or 8K to 16 to 32K. So that's the smallest unit we can write. But remember, when we have data in those pages, we have to erase it. And here's where the disparity comes in. The smallest erase unit is the block. A block consists of multiple pages. Depending on the NAND design, it could be 256 or 512 pages, but it's relatively speaking a large amount of space. So now bear with me a sec here. If we have a block, which is, you know, it's a couple hundred, 300 pages, and it has some data in it that we want to keep and some data in it that is okay to be deleted, what we have to do is gather up the data that's still good, move it somewhere else onto the SSD so that we keep it, then we can erase the entire block in preparation for writing new data. So writing new data on a drive that has been written is almost this two-step process. We have to gather up the stuff that we want to keep and move it so that we can erase the block and then write the new data. The reason that's important is that internal data movement, that's called garbage collection, the internal data movement consumes some of the bandwidth inside the SSD, some of the bandwidth of the NAND array, some of the bandwidth of the controller. So what we see is we write an SSD from fresh out of box or brand new state, we would see the write performance change as a function of time. As we fill it, refill it, and refill it again, more of that internal bandwidth gets consumed by moving the data around to keep the parts that are still valid in preparation for erasure. And SNIA has spent a lot of time on this, and Micron, and to be completely open, other companies will express the write performance of an SSD in terms of this steady state concept. Steady state means the write performance has already changed from fresh out of box to what the customer can expect to see in the very long term. If you think of it as an XY axis plot, where we've got write performance on the vertical axis and time on the horizontal axis, the performance will have gone sort of flat line, this nice, flat, even, predictable write performance that one can expect to see very long term. In the open market, there's the phrase steady state should be applied to that. So just a bit of a cautionary tale from my perspective. You'll see some drives specify sustained performance. And the difficulty with that is when we see that spec, it's often not noted sustained for how long. However, the concept of steady state is completely defined by SNIA. You can go to SNIA.org and look for the spec on how it's defined. but it really means that flat, unchanging versus time, very predictable, very stable performance that we're going to get after the drive has settled down and be refilled multiple times. Does that
Whoa.
Help?
You took me into the weeds, man. I want to go back to the mountaintop. Wow. And you know what, folks? These are the details that matter. And this is one of those things. And for the longtime listeners of the podcast, this is actually the fourth series we've done on Solid State of the Union. But this is the first that we've heard right from someone in the industry. You know, we talked to a couple practitioners, right? IT admins, blogger friends of mine and such. But when you think about the details that go in to this, it's really a big deal. And myself, I just wrote a blog post over at Virtualization Review, and one of the key quotes that I had was that really all SSDs are not created equal. And for the VMware folks out there, when you look on the compatibility guide, you'll notice that different VMs are given a classification of their potential read-write performance, right? And the PCI Express ones we were talking about earlier, they can hit well over 30,000, and I forget the exact measure, but there are some, you know, lower grade solid-state drives that are, you know, sub 5,000 of this number. So it really makes a big difference, and getting a hold on these types of mindsets and what to look for, making sure you're pulling in the attributes, thinking about the interfaces, SAS, SATA, or PCI Express. These are the details, folks. These are the knobs and dials of the future that are going to make the difference in your data center. Everything from backup to run state to your laptop performing better. This is what you need to look for. So, Doug, hey, this was an excellent conversation, and in the podcast notes, I'm going to put some links to some of the things we talked about, as well as defining some of these awesome acronyms. And anything you'd like to close us out with today, Doug?
You know, I guess the only thing would be there's a document out on micron.com. I'll make sure you get the link. That you want to go into the weeds? Take a read of this one. This is going to take you so far into the weeds, you're never going to find your way back to your car. In all seriousness, it's a really good primer on what steady state is and how to get there, why it's important. And it shows you mechanically how to do it yourself if you want to verify a manufacturer's claim.
Good
I guess the
stuff.
Only other thing I'd like to wrap up with is, I mean, you know, you've taken a look at flash drives in terms of system backup. I mean, can you give us maybe the 2-cent tour of your top three findings?
Sure. So for one, I find that restores are quicker, of course, folks. When you look, you know, this is a Veeam example, but when you build a Veeam backup repository, you know, I love the idea of putting a PCI Express drive in every server. I hate to use the word tax, but think of it as a reference architecture. If you want this extra level performance, tax or build the system with these drives in it and carve it up for backup. Put another one in for the run state. That's fine too. Or, you know, use a shared storage approach as well. But basically, I see that backups can be made really quick. Next thing I see is that the endpoint experience, things like, you know, your laptop, if you put solid state drives in there, of course it's going to be fast or faster. But additionally, this is giving you the power savings I spoke of earlier, which on a laptop translates to better battery life. Go one step further. Old PCs, don't laugh. I gave my sister-in-law a, I bought it in 2009. Used from my previous employer for $25, that laptop, I gave it to her with an SSD in it. She said it's the fastest computer she's ever used. There you go. Best new endpoint device. Third piece of advice I'll offer is really take a good look today at the costs. I'm convinced that costs have gone down, and if you haven't looked at the price of SSDs, you really should. So I think initially there was this mindset of, oh, you get, you know, 1,000x performance or something like that, but, you know, 10x the cost or whatever the number is. I'm convinced that the performance number is still up there, but in some situations your costs are really close, and when you look at the enhanced performance, you know, then maybe you could make the case of, well, maybe with this type of performance, volume deduplication is a good idea. Or maybe, you know, in a case of Veeam's built-in compression and deduplication, that's a good idea. If it comes especially back around to availability and backup, I'd love to see people put solid-state drives into their backup architecture, because when something fails, you want it back just as quick or even faster as it takes in the run state, right? The expectations are high today for the data center. Everybody knows that. So when it comes to when things go wrong, you should not have to settle for degraded performance and, you know, design it like you would any other piece of your data center. And I'm trying to evangelize to people to look at using, you know, SSDs as part of their strategy. And then, you know, go one step further. Go with the PCI Express approach. You know, you're not going to have a bottleneck. It's going to be the absolute best way to get that high-performance storage for something that you might need, like a Restore. Doug, I think I'm going to have to get you back on. This is good stuff. I really appreciate you sharing this with us today.
Hey, count me in anytime.